Blog Talk Radio.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of the Going Old School Show. Chips, Crow, and Joe, two Johns and a Joe here for you live on blogtalkradio.com. It is Wednesday, June 15th of the year 2022, and if you want to join us right off the top, we're talking sports for the next hour and a half, 515-602-9730, but first and foremost, let's bring on the anchors of the show, and that's a good way. Anchors, co-anchors. First and foremost, it's Joe Foran. Joe, how are you today?
Johnny, how are you doing, boys? Doing wonderful. Day off. Feel better than yesterday, so itching to get a good show under my belt, and let's have some fun today.
Always a pleasure, Joe. JC, top of the afternoon to you, brother. How is everything?
Hello, happy hump day, and I have good news for Celtics fans.
Here we go.
In just a moment.
All right. I've talked about the ultimate tease, and that's what John Crow does best. Tease, tease, tease. Speaking of topics, we will talk some Major League Baseball with our weekly top five power rankings. We'll talk some Boston Red Sox as well, as they're continuing to play well. And we'll argue about that, talk about a little bit about the bullpen or lack thereof. Give us a stay in Pittsburgh Pirates history. I'm going to have a little twist on that, if you will. We will talk some hockey because the NHL finals are underway tonight, and a team making trying to make history are the Tampa Bay Lightning against a really solid Colorado Avalanche hockey team. And we will talk also about didn't take long for Butch Cassidy to land elsewhere in the NHL, and we'll give our thoughts on that as we will. We'll get to Lou in New Jersey in just a moment, who's welcome to join the show. But we are going to talk the NBA finals, guys, and we'll talk Game 6 tomorrow night at the Garden in Boston. Anticipation, interesting, Celts down 3-2. But before we do that, we've got to recap what we saw on Monday night, JC. And the first thing that came to me was, man, when this team goes off the rails, meaning the Boston Celtics, they do it majestically, whether it's a quarter, whether it's a stretch of 5 minutes, whether it's a stretch of 10 minutes. When they do it with the best of them, and like you read about, JC, it's amazing to see the schizophrenia on the court with the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, it's I don't even know what the word for it is anymore, because it's certainly disheartening to see a team that is so talented show you these streaks of minutes that just befuddle you like nobody's business. But the one bit of good news I will tell you is it's in the form of a question. When was the last time the Boston Celtics won a championship? What was the year?
2008.
Yep.
You are correct. And today, I feel like it's 2008 because things are coming back around, it seems, here in New England. And maybe it's good news that the Celtics get them back in that frame of mind of 2008, because what we saw for the first half in San Francisco the other night, man, that was bad. They had that hangover from Friday night, game four. It took them until the third quarter to get whatever it was in their head out of their head. And unfortunately, when Jaylen Brown and his mid-range jumper clanked with a second left in the third quarter, and Gordon Poole went up and hit another 40-foot three-pointer to end the quarter, that was the end, too. And I just don't get how this team just takes off quarters at a time. What do you think it is, guys?
Joe, go ahead.
Lack of focus, plain and simple, lack of focus. You got a job to do, do it. Stop your whining, stop your bitching, do your job.
Well, that's a tough one to answer in a word, but I honestly think it's immaturity, and I'm going to go back to the DNA thing. There's something in this team's DNA that sets them back, whether it's the prosperity, whether it's adversity, which you've seen them handle. There's something in this team's DNA, guys, and it has to change. I mean, regardless of what happens in the series, it has to change because – it rears its ugly head. This team is not mentally stable. That fractured locker room we talked about for 3 or 4 years, there are still remnants in that locker room. There is. It's just Udoka has come in and for some reason has sprinkled pixie dust on this team And they're playing well. I get it. But every once in a while, you see it. Marcus Smart on Friday night came out calling out players. Jaylen Brown called out the leaders, the same thing. They're pointing the blame at each other. If they're pointing the blame at each other in press conferences and in the locker rooms, they're sure as hell doing it on the court in some way, shape, or form, whether it's subliminal or not. I mean, whether they're passing up shots, Brown passing up shots, dishing it to Smart, the same thing with Tatum, dishing it to Smart in the fourth quarter. This team is not all together. And we may look back at how they're going this far, withstanding all this. And Emeka Udoka may be doing a much better job than they are. So it's focus, Joe. It's immaturity. And, again, there's something in this team's DNA, JC, that has to change. And I think it's just something that just bites them in the ass every once in a while. We're seeing it right in front of our eyes.
Is it just this team just has to go through the entire process before they get it through their head? I mean, is it that they're too young with their two superstars that – it just does not sink in, much like when we were all in our 20s. It took time after time after time to get through our head. And, you know, until your back is up against the wall for the final time, you just never believe it's going to be you that's in that situation. I don't know. But I saw a team that looked emotionally spent, looked physically gassed in that first half. And there's really no reason for either to be at this stage right now. They're a young team. Yes, they've been through 2 7-game series with the Heat and the Bucks. Got past them. They have 2 games off in between Game 4 and Game 5, Game 3, you know, Game 5 and Game 6. There's no reason for this team to be as gassed as they look. If anything, it should be the Warriors. The Celtics are the bigger team. They're the more dominant team. Yet they refuse to play that way. And it's some of that is on the players. Some of that's on the coaches. I mean, when Wiggins goes back-to-back for 20-plus points and double-digit rebounds, that's effort, friend. That's just effort. There's no reason why he should be going over. When Draymond Green looks like he's about 10 years younger than at any point during these playoffs, he has basically won them 2 games. I mean, we were talking back and forth, you know, during game five. Green set the tone in game 2, got them a win. He set the tone in game 5, got them a win. And if you're the Celtics, and my last point is, if you watch that game, Stephen Curry has the game that he has, doesn't hit a three-pointer for the first time in forever, scores 16 points, you should be embarrassed that you lost that game. You really should. That both of these games, we should be celebrating, and I'm going to sound like a homer here, but honestly, we should be celebrating an NBA championship having won the game, won the series 4-1. But you know what? We're not. And why is that? Because the Warriors seized the opportunity. They have that pedigree. And they said, yeah, we may not be as talented. Sure, we got the best player in the series, Stephen Curry. But you know what? Boston's more talented, and we kicked their ass. And that's why we're up 3-2.
Go ahead, Joe.
No, look, they're going to reach down, find the freaking balls, the freaking play basketball the way they can play. You are the bigger team. You're the better team. All around, you're the better team. There is no excuse for the way they're playing. And, yes, something's brewing underneath, and it's getting covered. But I'm telling you, they lose this series, it's all going to come to a head. I guarantee it, because there's, like, no way this is going to get brushed under the rug if there's issues going on with this team and they lose. Because they had it by, they had the Golden State Warriors by the throat, a.k.a. the New York Rangers, and let a series slip right through their hands. They've got to come out, they've got to play some basketball and play it the right way and stop bitching, stop moaning, stop hunting for fouls. Because JC, yes, I can see driving, but they're looking for the foul. Forget looking for the foul, just drive. If they're going to call it, play. If they're not going to call it, just drive through them and do it. And look, Williams needs to show up in the first field. Right now, you're letting Green
act like a little kid. You act like a dumb idea. Smack him upside the head, play hard, play business, and make him pay for it. But you're not. So until then, boys in the money series, you want to say smart enough.
Let's go to the phones and bring in Lou from New Jersey, who was nice enough to hold for us. Lou. Lou, thanks for calling the Going Old School show. What's on your mind, sir?
Well, thanks. I didn't think you would know it was me because I'm using a different number, but thanks. Okay. Well, you know.
A New York man undercover. Oh, well.
So 90s. Yeah. Well, it looks like, you know, just when you thought that the Celtics were going to make a comeback in that game, Curry stepped up and, you know, made a run at it, and that's where they are now. Celtics have to, you know, keep your guard up, you know, if they're going to have a chance to even this series at 3-3. So they have to work it out for them. You know, I mean, and I had them as a dark horse pick, of course, and, you know, my predictions have been correct. But I'm hoping for, you know, a seventh game.
Lou, yeah. Let me cut you off. Coming from a Boston fan, a homer, don't kick the dog when it's down. You kick the dog
right
when it's down, both teams will come back and we'll kick your butt in. So you can kick us when we're down, we're going to come back. So enjoy it while you can.
Right.
This team's not done.
I wish I could say the same was for the Rangers, though, but that's another story. I mean, they have 2-0, and they just like, you know, so you know, hoping for your sake it doesn't happen like this, you know. You know, but it's been a very entertaining series to watch. And, you know, I'll be looking forward to Game 6 tomorrow as well. And you know we're going to cover that on the show on Saturday. This is turned
agree.
A good series. Of course, you know, it all comes on who has, you know, enough gas in the tank at this time of year, as I've always said. By the way, questions came up last night on another program. And they were asking about, what do you think was a better way for file? The old 2-3-2 or the new 2-2-1-1-1, whatever it is. You know, I always thought, like, you know, at least 2-3-2 cuts down on the travel because wear and tear, you know, happens a lot this season. And, you know, I always was more in favor of the 2-3-2 series rather than what it is now. Am I the only one who thinks that way, or does someone else agree with me? I hope.
Yeah, I'll take that. And I like the 2-2-1-1-1 because if you have home court advantage, you should never be down in the series if the home team
right
wins. It's too
exactly
much of an advantage with that three in the middle. That's way too much.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Well, I'm the same way. Go ahead, Lou.
Lou, coming from the guy who's got 17 championships, 2-2-1-1-1, you didn't get home court advantage to have three games in the middle of the team
right
with the non-home court advantage.
Oh, Lou, by the way, Lou,
mm-hmm.
You as a New York fan, right now you've got scoreboard in baseball, so you can tout that all you want because you guys are kicking ass on both sides. And
you certainly
and
are.
The Rangers,
Yankees have 45 wins on the season. The Mets are there. They have 40 wins, even though they're doing well. You know, some of the best pitchers. You know. DeGrom, buddy, seems to be coming back, and Mad Max. So once they get back together, you know, I think the Mets are going to be in the driver's seat. But watch out for the Mets and the Phillies. I mean, ever since Girardi got fired, the Phillies were on a hot streak, and the Braves now won 13 in a row.
Yep.
When was the last time that happened? What, 1986 or something? I mean, because I remember the last time they got that. So the National League East is heating up now. So
like
you might want to keep your eye on this.
We will. All right, Lou, tell us what's going on your show this week. Pump it up, baby.
All right. Well, of course, the Enhanced Sports Show rolls on, and we'll roll on through the summer, not for the rest of the year, that matter. The number to call is 512-543-4662. Number again, 512-543-4662. We're on from 5 to 7 p.m. Saturdays. You know we're going to be discussing the NBA Finals. Whether it ends tomorrow night or not remains to be seen. NHL Finals. I'm going to save what I'm going to pick just in case you guys call on Saturday if you could. So I'm going to hold off on who I'm going to say is going to win. U.S. Open Golf Championship gets underway, and that's tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll keep our eye on that. And you would not believe what the favorite is to win it. It's not what you think, guys. It's not what you think.
Although always a pleasure, man.
And, of course, final week of the USFL regular season. So we're going to keep our eye on that as well, for those of special interest, of course. And being that it's that certain time of the year, it's also the week where we honor dads and grads. Dads are Father's Day, and graduates for those who are graduating junior high, high school, college, medical school, or whatever the case may be. So, you know, if you're one of those, feel free to call in. Remember, it's 512-543-4662, Saturday, 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time.
Always a pleasure, Lou. Not thanks, freedom. Man.
All right. Thanks, fellas.
Take care of yourself, man. That's our boy Lou in New Jersey. Lou in New Jersey, thanks for calling in, as we always do. And he's talked about the Celtics, and I want to kind of pick up where we left off with that. One, Jason Tatum. JC, is the say too big for this guy?
Appears to be. You know, he's a little too happy, a little too cheery in his post-game press conferences for my liking. And, you know, what I hope we don't hear after all said and done, win or lose, whatever, is that, oh, I was playing with a bum shoulder the whole series, and that's why I don't want to hear it.
Yep.
Listen, everyone's banged up at this point in the season. So you know what? It's okay. Jason Tatum just needs to play his game. And I think it's more mental than physical with him, because Jeff Van Gundy has it 100% correct. It's about three or four times during the game, he'll say, that's a great play by Tatum. Decisive, decisive, decisive. And that's more on Jason Tatum than just the physical nature of the game to me, is when he waits, whether it be dribbling the ball at the top of the key, trying to get the most of a matchup against Stephen Curry, or if it's driving to the hoop, hunting the foul, and waiting to finish, when he is decisive, makes his move, and either goes up fast or makes that pass, good things happen. So I want that Jason Tatum tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
I want the quick decision-making Jason Tatum. He'll be fine if he does that. If we see what we saw when he's tentative, lacking confidence in that first half, he had 0 points on zero shots before Ime Udoka early in that first quarter in game five. And thankfully he did. You know, finally got going in the third quarter. But what we need from him is, yes, I know we all want the 40-point game and everything, but you need that 30-point, 10-plus assist game. That's
yep.
the magical number for him, the magical double-double for him. When you're getting 28 points and 4 assists, that's not good enough because it's leaving you with nobody else being involved in the offense. And that's exactly what they got the other night. I mean, think about what they got from their, you know, role players. Pritchard, 0 points. Derek White, 1 point. Grant Williams, 3 points. Al Horford, what, yeah, 10, maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
If that. You know, your three stepped up. They had enough, but you just left. I mean, we're seeing it on the other side. It wasn't all about Curry. It was about getting Wiggins involved and Poole involved and Looney involved on the boards. Grant, you know, we took out Klay Thompson, getting his mojo back,
yep.
you know, in that third and fourth quarter. That day they found the recipe. It's not always about that, you know, the one star. But if your star can get the others involved, like why the Warriors are up 3-2. It can make an Andrew Wiggins look like an MVP candidate in this thing.
John, is the stage too big for Jason Tatum?
So far, yes. I mean, he's going to – look, I want to see the anger. I want to see the anger of losing a game in a press conference. I don't want to see his kid there, and I want to see some emotions. I don't want to see a guy that seems like he's just happy to be there. I want some anger towards losing, and I want it shown on the court. And I want to see the will to win. And he's not showing it right now, so it's like just a matter of – he's going to show it, and he's not. And it's like, just don't be happy to be there. Pay to win. Demand
yeah,
the ball. Demand
yeah.
the ball and dictate where it goes. But I hate when he doesn't touch the ball on the offensive side and he just disappears for minutes on end.
I don't think we're ever going to see or know if he's angry or not, because that seems to be just in his demeanor, off the court especially. On the court, I mean, he seems pretty soft-spoken, but on the court, he's a different story. But, you know, this is the guy right now, Jaylen Brown. He's taken 21 shots in the fourth quarter in the series, made five of them. That has got to change now, obviously, tonight. He averages 20 field goals, just over 20 field goals a game. It's got to change. It's got to get more. He's got to get to the line, guys. He's not driving the ball. He goes to the free throw line and averages 6 times a game when he makes 4. He's only shooting 65.6% from the free throw line, and he's a minus 3.8 on the court. Listen to this. Tatum minus 3.8. Marcus Smart is a minus 4. Derek White in 28 minutes is a minus 7+. Al Horford in 30 minutes is a minus 5.8. Grant Williams in 17 minutes is a minus 7.4. The only major player for them outside of Jaylen Brown who's even is Robert Williams III, who is a 6.2+. That's not getting it done. Your stars cannot be on the floor like that and continue to run the deficit. That has got to change. Can it? We saw that the series with Miami. It changed for a game when Miami came back and won game 6. But that's got to change, man. DC.
Yeah, it does. And you know, it kills you that they had that amazing third quarter, right? 35-21 until they let Poole hit that three-pointer at the end. And it's not luck. Jaylen Brown screwed up. He ran the play too early, and it gave the Warriors an opportunity. You know, kudos for hitting the shot, but it should never have happened. They should never had that opportunity. And you're absolutely right. It's, you know, for a team that has the size and the weight advantage down low, plus 10 were the Warriors in the paint area.
Yeah.
They got out-rebounded by the Warriors. It just boggles your mind that they just refuse to pound the ball in the paint, drive the ball successfully in the paint. And I tell you what, I saw this stat last night, and it blew me away. I want to get both your reactions to this. It was on NBC Sports Boston, and it tells you a little bit about the Celtics in close games. The Celtics have not made a three-point shot in the final minute, final 4 minutes of any postseason playoff game when it's a one-possession game.
Wow.
That shot blew me away. That's not just one player. That's the entire team pulling an 0-4 in close and late. Your reaction?
It's a team that can't play under pressure. Team like to me, guy, it's like a team that is not playing pass the ball. They seem to go backyard basketball, all about me, and they don't seem to pass it enough in one possession games. They seem to look for the quick shot instead of looking for the best shot. So I mean, it's a combination of both of a little bit of pressure, nerves, but it's also them not moving the ball around enough. You've seen it in game 5. I mean, in game 4, it just, they didn't move the ball around, and it's like they were settling for three-pointers when they were only down 3. It's just, you got to move the ball, and I don't mind open three-pointers, but, like, not that quickly into the shot clock. It's like you got to move the ball around, make them play some D. Look, Golden State's defense just didn't change overnight. They're still soft in the middle, and we're still not exploiting it.
Second best defense outside the Celtics all year long, Joe. So that they're not chopped liver, that Golden State team. But here's JC. When you point that stat out, when you tell that, it makes me wonder. My first thought when you're telling me that stat, I'm like, they're gonna feel fortunate they're in the series this far or in the playoffs to where they are, because we talk about close and late in baseball. We talk about close and late in football. And some athletes and some players and some teams have this embedded, and they develop that through time, experience, what have you. But this is a team with an all-NBA player, a top 10 player in the league, if you will, who is playing lights out in the playoffs, lights out second half, and they can't do this in the final 4 minutes. I'll tell you, that makes me wonder about this team. I'm going to tell you, they're not ready for this yet. They're not ready for the moment. They're not ready for the moment. That's the only thing I can sum up. And if they continue this pace with a Golden State Warrior team that's been here before and is looking for blood coming into Boston, because let me tell you something, this Golden State team, and we've heard some of the comments, there's a part of that, there's a part of this team, they'll never say it, they almost relished the fact to come here into the Garden tomorrow night and to win it in Boston. JC, am I wrong about that?
No, you're absolutely right, because coming to Boston, there's zero pressure. The more desperate team is obviously the Boston Celtics, because if they lose, the season's over. But they would like nothing better, because this would be their greatest championship. There's no Kevin Durant joining everybody else to put them over the top and win a couple of titles. This is not their first one. This is Curry, Thompson, Green, banged up, bruised, thrown out with the bathwater 2 years ago,
yep,
saying, you guys are done, break up the band. And now here they are, 48 minutes away from making them a dynasty and saying, Kevin Durant, here's two giant middle fingers. We're not good enough for you. Screw you, man. We'll do this and we'll keep winning because we're going to reload. We're going to pay everybody and we're going to get some people on top, because we talk about Boston being a young team and being that team that can, you know, keep it going. Look at that Warrior team. My goodness. You got Wiggins. You got Poole. You've got Kuminga. I mean, they have some studs in there. I mean, we might be talking in 5 years that some of those guys are the new faces of the NBA. I mean, obviously Wiggins has been around a while, you know, being in Minnesota and now being in Golden State. But that's why if you're the Celtics, you have got to get this going early and keep the hammer down. Because the other side of that stat that we talked about, having nothing close and late, is that they've been in a lot of front-running games. They haven't had to be in those situations.
Right.
And when they get there, they just don't execute. So they don't know how to do it. They're not good at it. So to answer your question on how they've gotten this far, there's been a lot of front-running games. And when they don't have that fourth quarter 10 to 14-point lead, they're very uncomfortable. So the only way out of it is to get that 10 to 14-point fourth quarter lead.
And to go to your point, Chip, they may have the number two defense. They play in the Western Conference. Western Conference is all about chucking up threes and outside shots. Eastern Conference is where all the inside play is and the inside guys running to the rim. So Golden State, I feel that number two-ranked defense is a little jaded playing the Western Conference. It's just my opinion. But look at where all the teams that play on the inside are. They're all in the Eastern Conference. So I think that the Milwaukee Bucks, to me, are a better inside defensive team than the Golden State Warriors. They just, you know, you can take it to them. You should be able to take it to them. The Boston just has chose not to, and they paid dearly for it. You've got a team in bonus 2 games in a row, and you don't take advantage of it. That's your own damn fault.
Joe, this whole team, the league lives by the three. It's not just a matter of conferences. I mean, it's about three in the D, as you hear. If you hit 40% of your 3-point shots, where the league is geared now, you're going to win more games than you lose. It's that simple. I don't think it's relegated to the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference. That's just my opinion. But I mean, you can argue that. But I just think you can't discredit Golden State defense, because league-wide, they stepped up pretty well. They've been able to turn that defense on at certain times, at certain points in this game, and been able to frustrate this Celtic team. And I think that it's more than just the Celtics not playing badly or the Celtics playing poorly. There's also a reason they're playing poorly, and it works both ways as well, like you talk in all sports. So, but let me ask you a question as we finish up the NBA segment. Joe, I'll start with you. First part, and I'll get to you. The Celtics will win Game 6, Joe, if
Jason Tatum shows up and learns how to distribute the ball, makes the right plays, and we get 16 or less turnovers.
Same question to you, JC.
They impose their will, both mentally and physically, on Golden State in the first 8 minutes. and sustain it in the first 8 minutes of the third quarter. It's not just a one-time thing. It's the Celtics about wanting to play basketball the correct way, the way that they tell us they play it in the post-game press conferences, but so many times they rarely show us on the court. So I'm not going to put a number on it because I think there's many ways that we can fluctuate what Jason Tatum gets or what Jaylen Brown gets, but they got to show up and impose their will, and it starts with that large muscle between their ears.
You got it. The Celtics will win game six if Jason Tatum takes 27 or more shots and grabs 10 rebounds like you had mentioned earlier. If they do that, if he does that, because I think this is his time and he's going to have to do it. I think we need to see this. I think he needs to prove this. I think there's a lot at stake, not his legacy. I think it might be – it doesn't look like it's time now. Can he rise from the ashes? Sure. He can snag an MVP with two real good games. There's no question about that. But we need to see your top player, your superstar, your all-NBA player in Jason Tatum take the game over tomorrow night. It's that simple. I think that it'll trickle-down effect. It will bode well for the team. But it starts with him, be it first quarter, second quarter, third or fourth. Would I like to see him have a great fourth quarter and close late? Yeah. But we've got to see it. Because if we don't see it early and often, we may not see it because we've seen this team kind of manifest itself and kind of play down to the strengths or to the way or their style, if they will. So Jason Tatum's the key. I'll agree with you, Joe. The Golden State Warriors will win game six, JC, if
Andrew Wiggins gets another double-double, and as a team, they out-rebound the Boston Celtics. It's that simple for me, because Curry can have another off-shooting night. You can hold Klay Thompson free for, you know, hold them down for three quarters. But if the Warriors are dominant again down low on the boards, they will be hoisting yet another championship.
Same to you, Joe.
If Golden State Warriors will win one, if Curry shows up and scores 40-plus points, or two, if a couple of the role players have the game like they had in game number five, if Wiggins shows up, Poole or another one, and Green imposes his will, the Golden State Warriors will win.
The Golden State Warriors will win game six if Klay Thompson does the game six Klay Thompson like we've seen in the past, not only against Dallas, but in the past when they've won championships and they've had solid runs. Klay Thompson has come up big in game sixes. If he does that, because we know they're not going to shut Curry out, if those two get rolling in game six and Curry has a 25 to 30 point night, lights out, my opinion. But that's my keys to the game. But it was good talking some hoops with you guys. Joe Foran, JC here with John, with yours truly, Johnny Sanchez, on the Going Old School show on blogtalkradio.com if you want to join us. 515-602-9730. We'll talk a little baseball later in the show. We'll talk some top five power rankings, little Pittsburgh Pirates, little Boston Red Sox. But we've got to talk about the Bruins, and we'll follow up. I got a little take on the NBA Finals. But, Joe, I'm going to start with you. Bruce Cassidy, we all talked about it last week, fired. We knew it wouldn't be long for this guy to be taken up off the unemployment line. He was by the Vegas Knights. Joe, what were your first thoughts when you heard that?
My first thought is, okay, so it didn't take you long to find the team because it wasn't the coach that was at issue with the Boston Bruins, but and knew that teams would want him because he's a good coach. He's proved it. And I like his style, like his way of doing things. He's not afraid to call players out. And he's going to Golden Knights, which is, for a franchise team, they're going in the right direction, and they're staying in the right direction. Take notes, Neely and Mr. Jacobs. But doesn't surprise me.
Go ahead, Johnny.
Yeah, I was happy for Bruce. You know, talk about a guy who just bets on himself. You know, as he said it in his press game of his his press conference after being fired by the Bruins, he said, somebody asked him, so you're going to sit out the year? He's like, hell no. I'm a coach. It's what I do. He was owed $3 million by the Boston Bruins. He said, keep it. I'm going to go coach for the Vegas Golden Knights. You know, good for him because he's valued. He should be valued. Saying he didn't have any part in the blame of why this team in Boston didn't do as well as it should have. Sure, he's got a part of it, but it wasn't all him, and he shouldn't have been the 100% scapegoat. So good for him. He's with a good organization who, they've been to the Stanley Cup playoffs. They've been to the Stanley Cup finals. They're in a great city. And, hey, he can hang out in New England West with Josh McDaniels and everybody else from Foxborough. And you know what? He'll probably win before the Boston Bruins do. So, hey, I have somebody new to root for out West, right?
It kind of makes it fun. It kind of breaks it. You can pick – go ahead, Joe. You can pick a team to root for out West. Go ahead, Joseph.
Asking for a friend here. So if the Vegas Knights win a championship, are we going to hold a parade for them?
Absolutely.
Could be, and I want to get to something like that. We're going to talk a little Colorado Avalanche after this, but I love what Bruce Cassidy said in a statement. He said, quote, I am excited to join an organization that shares my commitment to winning and can't wait to get to work with the talent that has been assembled in Vegas, unquote. Slap in the face. Talk about a middle finger to the Bruins. You're right, JC. It wasn't his problem. All he did was go 245 and 108 and 46 since February of 2017. Six playoff appearances, including a Stanley Cup final. And if they hadn't backed their asses up and put their tail between the legs and won a game seven on home ice, and we all know what happened then he'd have a Stanley Cup. It might be a different rhetoric and a different narrative on Bruce Cassidy. Happy for him. This Las Vegas team, they're committed to winning. First year in the league, they go to the Stanley Cup final. So next year, they lose in the first round. Next year, they fire coach Gerard Gallant, who's the coach of the Rangers now, 50 games in, and hired Peter DeBoer because they weren't winning enough. They were winning at the time. This is how committed this team is to winning, this organization. They did lose in the conference final. Then they lost in the semifinals in 2021, and they did 43-31 this year. They get rid of the coach, and they bring in a winner. That tells me something that this organization is not settled for anything. You know, maybe not a big market, maybe not the Bostons and New Yorks and the LAs of the world, but Vegas has proven they're passionate fan base, and they want a winner. And the organizations are doing that. I think the football team wants it, and it sure looks like this hockey team is committed to winning because they don't sit and rest on their laurels. They move on, and that's what I like about this team. Good situation, Bruce, and it does give us some team to root for, and you got to pull for the guy because pretty stand up. And when a coach says he's there to win championships, that's all I want to hear. Because when a Bruins coach says he's there to win championships, he doesn't fit well with the organization, be that as it may. Good stuff there, guys. We had to get that in. But, Joe, Colorado's in the Stanley Cup final for the first time since, Ray Bourque was there. Is there any truth to the rumor that he's dropping out the ceremony first puck tonight?
I don't know. I would think maybe he might, but I don't know. I couldn't even tell you. I haven't been paying attention to that. I don't like the way Tampa Bay has gone about things the last 2 years, but kudos to them because they have been to three Stanley Cup finals in a row. And it's like they are playing well in the playoffs and doing what it takes to win in the playoffs and good for them. And it's like it's amazing that, you know, teams in Tampa have more passion about winning hockey than teams in Boston, one of the original six. Tells you all you need to know is about the ownership in Boston, and until that changes, nothing's going to change in Boston.
Any thoughts, Jesse?
Yeah, I just wish, you know, the Avalanche didn't have as much time off as they do, you know, heading into this, because Tampa Bay has just been grinding along, getting better every step of the way, and unfortunately, we might be seeing an Avalanche team that, much like the, you know, we look at the Celtics, the moment might be too big for them. And then when you add in the rush factor, you know, you allow, you know, Tampa to come in to Colorado game one and maybe steal away that game. It might be just enough for them to take the third straight cup. So, hey, I'm rooting for the Avalanche just because I want some new blood. But I just can't pick against the Lightning. I just can't.
Yep. I agree. And, that's, you know, from a story standpoint, they're two good ones. The Avalanche have won that. As a matter of fact, the Avalanche have won two Stanley Cups. They won their first year when they moved over from Quebec in 95-96, and they won with Ray Bourque in 2000. We know the whole story. But if you like history, guys, no team is – I mean, you had great – you had the Islanders go to four. You had a great Detroit Red Wing team. You had a great Pittsburgh team. You had a great Edmonton Oilers team twice, and none of them have gone to three Stanley Cups and won three in a row. I mean, this Tampa team is on the verge of doing something that is really, really remarkable. And as much as I dislike them, there's a part of me that's rooting for this story because they were, I thought they were dead and buried. They weren't supposed to be this good. They were kind of falling off. Vasilevskiy was showing chinks in the armor. They were hurt, getting old. Stamkos, maybe they just don't have it this year. Long seasons, Stanley Cup runs take their tolls on people. This team flipped the switch. And, oh, by the way, they get the best player back tonight in Braden Point. And that is scary. And what they did to the Rangers the other night, and kudos to the Rangers, they fought back and get that goal, and 21 seconds later, they just ripped their hearts out. I mean, that's what teams of championship caliber do, the way they do it. Players step up. It's just amazing to watch what they are. I'm rooting for Colorado, JC and Jill, but I can't bet against this Lightning team. They're just solid. But from a star standpoint, what?
How healthy is – I know he's playing. That doesn't mean nothing. It's like how healthy is Braden Point because he is key to that team winning. If he's
right.
healthy and can contribute, it's fine. If he's healthy and really not the same Braden Point, he may be a detriment to Tampa Bay more than help. That's just my opinion because Braden Point means a lot to this team. He means a lot to that team. And hopefully he's healthy and close to 75-80%. But they can't have anything less than that. And he can't just be there for being there. It's like they need him to be help out because he means a lot to that team.
JC, do you think with Braden Point in there, just having him on the ice, you have to account for him, whether he's healthy or not? Like you say to some, like some football players, you know what I'm saying, JC?
Absolutely. And it's the mental part of the game that he's going to bring too as well. So it's kind of a calming influence for the rest of the guys out there, just knowing you have him there. And, hey, we always say it always comes down to the goalies. Who's going to play hot, you know? We'll see if 10 days off is going to stymie the Avalanche. And we'll know early because if you ain't got it, the 10 days, it's going to show very, very early. Next. So let's go, Avs.
Okay, that's the Hockey Minute brought to you by absolutely nobody on the Going Old School show. Anyway, we got a little under 47 minutes left in the show on blogtalkradio.com. Crow, Chips, and Joe here for you. Wednesday, June 15th of the year 2022. It is 7:43 p.m. Eastern Time, smack dab in the middle of June, in the middle of summer. We're going to talk a little bit of Red Sox baseball, but let's get to and a little bit of Pittsburgh Pirates history, if you will, if you let us indulge ourselves. And we'll let the guys bring us into the squared circle as well in the classroom. But, guys, let's get into our top five power rankings this week, Joe. And I want you to start it off, as we each do in each and every week, on the Going Old School Show podcast. Going Old School Show podcast. Joe, top five power rankings. Go right ahead.
My number five team is the Boston Red Sox. Nah. It's... No, my top five team, I actually thought about the Sox, but I could not, you know, it's up to the minute. It's, you know, what's happened with a 13-game win streak. I could not ignore the Atlanta Braves being my top five team. They're 13-0 in June. They have a plus 38 run differential. Even though they lost Ozzie Albies for 60 days, another key injury to them, I still think they're hot. Austin Riley leading the way with 216 homers, 35 RBIs, slugging .508. Marcell Ozuna still doing all right, 232, 12 homers, 26 RBIs, slugging .418. Max Fried, 7-2, 2.9 ERA. Kyle Wright, 7-3, 2.59 ERA. Old friend from L.A., Kelsey Jansen, 3-0, 18 saves. Look, right now I can't ignore the fact that 13-0 in the last 13 games, So over the Houston Astros, I've got the Atlanta Braves as my number five team.
At number five, the Red Sox were in contention for my number five spot, but, you know, I just dismissed them a little bit for a fellow American League Eastern team, the Toronto Blue Jays.
Whoa.
They're 36-25, 6-4 in their last 10, but they rolled off 17 out of the last 24, and they've gotten themselves a plus 49 run differential. They're getting things back together. They were a little stagnant on offense for about a 2 to 3 week stage, but they've gotten it back going. Alex Manoah, 8-1, 1.67 ERA, and they're doing just enough to garner that number five spot. They're going to face the Yankees coming up soon, so it'll be nice. Maybe the Red Sox can get something out of them, you know, to knock off the Yankees because they are just gangbusters. But the Blue Jays, just inching out the Cardinals and the Red Sox at number five this week.
There you go. My number five team, as it was last week, are the San Diego Padres, who are tied for first right now in the loss column with the L.A. Dodgers. They've won 7 out of 10, 9-5 in the month of June. Team's top five in strikeouts, saves, and team ERA. Darvish, Manaea, Musgrove, and Mackenzie Gore doing what they can do. 20 wins combined amongst them. How about this? Where has Blake Snell gone? I mean, the 2018 Cy Young Award winner, traded by the Tampa Bay Rays after that World Series, and just nothing done. A couple of injuries, but he's a forgotten man in Major League Baseball. Gets five starts this year, 0-3 with a 5.04 ERA. He's given up 14 earned runs in 25 innings. But Manny Machado has a strong case right now for MVP for the first half of the season. He's a .315 batting average, 10 homers, 30 ribbies, an on-base percentage of .386, 74 hits, and is slugging at a .519 clip. He's carrying this team. If they can get Fernando Tatis Jr., it's looking like August now for this guy, but get him back healthy, get that wrist, and stay off the motorcycles there, man. Tatis, stay off the motorcycles, dude. You're in the contract. You're breaking in your wrist and stuff. But if they can get Fernando Tatis, just stay the course with a good manager, and it's looking like that inning's pretty solid again. But the San Diego Padres right now, as they were last week, are my number five team.
My number four team is your number five team, the San Diego Padres, for all the above reasons. And if Joe Musgrove can keep up what he's doing in so far, first third of the season with a 7.015 ERA, Darvish, Mackenzie Gore, 3.30 ERA as a team. If they can get anything out of Mike Clevinger and get him back healthy enough to make a – he's out right now with COVID-19, even though he made a comeback. If he can come anywhere close to that, coming back from Tommy John surgery, they can make a lot of noise in the NL West with the Dodgers. Right now, the difference between them and the Dodgers is – right now, San Diego has proven they can win one-run games. They're 12-7 one-run games, which seems to be the Achilles heel of the Dodgers. But in San Diego, they're plus 58 in runs. I've got them as my number four team.
My number four team, the Atlanta Braves, 13-game win streak. And, yeah, they're playing some pretty bad teams. But you know what? That's what you do if you're going to go from a team six games under 500 to a team that's getting back into the National League East race, just five games back of the Mets now. And they're winning again tonight, beating the Nationals right now, 1-0 in the top of the third. Want to give some love. They have, you know, the Albies injury. He's out with a broken foot. But Michael Harris, the Atlanta prop, Atlanta native, couple of home runs, hitting .313 since the call-up, getting it done in center field for the Braves, joining Austin Riley with his 16 home runs, and Matt Olson with 24 doubles, getting it done, keeping it going. And they're a team that, you know what, could have packed it in, defending champion, have some injuries again, slow start. But here they are, getting right back in it. So number four,
agreed.
Atlanta Braves.
I'm right there with you, JC. They slug in on this 13-game streak going into tonight. They're slugging .567 with 32 homers. But on June 1st, they were 23-27, 10.5 games behind the Mets. And I said at the time, I think they're playing for the wild card. So because of the way the Mets are playing, Mets have had some injuries, I get that. Since that day, they won the 13th straight, outscoring opponents 87-39, and the lead is cut in half. And now they're 5 games behind going into tonight's action. Ronald Acuña starting to round into form. Travis d'Arnaud, a catcher hitting .262 with 8 bombs. I'll take that any day of the week. A year ago, on June 1st, the Braves were 25-26, 4 games behind the Mets. They finished 63-47, got to the playoffs, and we know what happened after that. Something to be said. We talk about DNA and getting it done. There's a pedigree there. Look out. History could be repeating itself with the Braves, and they're my number 4 team.
And just before I go to my number 3 team, your wild card on those Braves is a man named Michael Soroka. They get him back, they could be calling major damage in that division, mm-hmm. but we'll see. My number 3 team, Tina's been number 3 last week, the L.A. Dodgers. Because right now, they're still 38-23. I know they're 4-6 in the last 10 games. But right now, the 108-run difference, Mookie Betts, 278, 17 homers, 40 RBIs, 544 slugging. Trey Turner, 297, 7 homers, 46 RBIs, 460 slugging. Freddie Freeman, he's batting .286, only 5 homers, but he's a common influence in that dugout, and hopefully they just seem to be sleepwalking through the regular season because they've got Tyler Anderson, 7-0, 3.07 ERA, Tony Gonsolin, 8-0, 1.42 ERA, Clayton Kershaw, only 4-1, 2.12, but he's had some injuries to deal with. So, I mean, Craig Kimbrell, 12 saves. They got a 3.01 team ERA. As much as they seem like they're sleepwalking and don't seem motivated enough, they've got enough talent that I think they can get it done, but they're my number 3 team right now in my power rankings.
At number 3, I've got the team that I think will dethrone the L.A. Dodgers and take full sole possession of first place in the NL West, and that's the San Diego Padres. And you guys have done a great job explaining why the Padres are so good. And I'm just going to add in, you know, they beat the Mets in a series over the weekend at home, but it's on the road is where the Pods are doing their damage. 22-11. They're two-thirds. They're playing 6,700 ball on the road, and that's tough to do. Time with my number 3, but the Pods are getting it done, and they can hang on while Tatis somehow gets healthy and joins them. And you know they're going to make an addition somehow at the training deadline, which is a little bit later this year, August 2nd. So the Pods have between now and August 2nd, keep it together, they may have a shot. We wouldn't have said this, you know, a month ago, that anyone has a chance to beat the Dodgers, but
yep.
They have a shot.
My number 3 team are the Dodgers as well. 4-7 in one-run games got to concern you. 0-4 in extras could be a little demoralizing, if you will. 5-7 in the month of June. They take on the inner city rival Angels in game 2 of a short 2-game set tonight. But they were swept in 3 games by San Francisco. Walker Buehler is on the 15-day DL. I know it's a bone spur. He's due back after 15 days. But it's going to be interesting to see what this team does at the trade deadline, JC, because of what you mentioned. Now it's looking like a 3-team race again in this division. And 2 weeks ago, we weren't even talking about San Diego and maybe hanging around for a wild card, much as being a division contender. But now the Giants are back in it, only 3.5 games out going into tonight. So it could be a rugged National League West going down the stretch like it was last year. And for entertainment purposes only, that'd be must-see TV in my home. I like the Dodgers, and they're my number 3 team this week in our power rankings.
And my number 2 team in my power rankings is the New York Mets, 41-22, first place in the NL East. They have a +71 differential. They're 6-4 in the last 10 games, led by Pete Alonso, .289, 18 homers, 59 RBIs, 560 slugging. Francisco Lindor, not as great as you'd hope he'd be, but he's .245, 9 homers, 45 RBIs, 411 slugging. Still in Marte, if he can stay healthy, continue with .282, 7 homers, 34 RBIs, 445 slugging. Max Scherzer, even though he's hurt right now, if you get him back, he's 5-1, 2.54 ERA. If they can get him back, it'd be key for him. Carlos Carrasco, 7-2, 3.93 ERA. Tijon Walker, 4-2, .308. They can get Tyler McGill to keep on pitching better now that he's healthy again. Edwin Diaz, 12 saves. Look, right now the team's getting it done. Can they withstand the Braves? Only time will tell. I think they've got enough horses in the race that they can withstand them. I think they've got more pitching than they have last year, and they've got more hitting. So they're my number two in the power rankings. Take note, Lou.
Joe, you got to throw the hay in there.
I love it. I love it. This is getting boring,
oh,
though.
My God.
You know, every Wednesday, it's like two things happen. We have the New York teams atop our rankings, and Rafael Devers hits a home run, and Devers just went deep on a two-run shot as the Sox go up 3-0 on the A's. My number two team, just like you, Joe, the New York Mets. Everything you just said, it's becoming old hat, isn't it, with the Mets and the Yankees? But, hey. They just continue to get it done. So I'm not even going to bore you with stats or anything. Buck, you're doing it well.
I'm right there with you guys. We pretty much said a rugged 5-5 road trip against the Dodgers, Padres, and A's. They come home, including a slumping Brewers of 7 games with them and then Miami, so they can get back on track a little bit because the gap is closed between them and Atlanta. Pete Alonso, 5 homers in the month of June. But Chris Bassett with a nice performance like it. They're going to need him to do more of this. 8 innings pitched, 3 hits, no runs. It obviously was against the Nationals, but it's good for confidence because they need him without DeGrom and Scherzer in the lineup. Scherzer's going to come back long before DeGrom. DeGrom's going to throw an up-and-down bullpen session on Friday, but Scherzer will throw a simulated game tomorrow. And if they get those three guys back healthy, you're looking at one of the top pitching staffs in all of baseball, much less the National League. So Mets hanging in there. They'll stay the course. They're number two in my power rankings this week.
And just for the record, guys, everybody's going to have a comedian and a haymaker throw in the bunch. So it's like I'm the Bob Uecker of this threesome.
The
so,
Bob Uecker.
You know,
duly noted, Joe. Duly noted.
You just keep being you, Joe. Never change.
That's it, man.
Uh-huh.
State of course, baby.
My number one team this week is Chip's favorite team, the New York Yankees, at 129 plus differential. They're 9-1 in the last 10 games. They're the hottest team out there besides the Atlanta Braves. They're 11-1 in June. Here's the key for the New Yankees right now compared to last year. They're 12-4 in one-run games. They are better in those games than they were last year. Aaron Judge, 313, 24 homers, 48 RBI, slugging .674. His twin, Giancarlo Stanton, 273, 13 homers, 40 RBIs. He's slugging .523. Anthony Rizzo, 221, 15 homers, 41 RBIs. He seems to be the common influence on that left side, right side of the infield, the defense they needed. And when it comes to pitching, Gerrit Cole, somebody said a month ago that he was washed up and he was hurt. Well, he's only 6-1, 3.33 ERA. This is James Tong. 7-1, 2.93 ERA. Nestor Cortez, 5-2, 1.96 ERA. Aroldis Chapman, who's that? Clay Holmes, 10 saves, while Chapman has been on the injured list. So they're not missing a beat. New York just seems to be running away with this, and they've got their foot on the pedal, and they're not looking back. So right now I've got them as my number one team in the power rankings.
Ditto, the Yankees. They're winning again tonight against Tampa, 1-0. And all you have to say is the Red Sox, who we're all close to, have won 9 of 11, the last 11 games, and have lost ground to the New York Yankees. That's how white-hot the New York Yankees are. And there's no reason for them to change anytime soon.
Yep.
I mean, they're just getting it done on every phase, pitching, hitting, defense, and – for them, defensively, they made that one of their calling cards over the course of the offseason to get better defensively, and they've done that, and they've got it done with guys you wouldn't expect. And you know, you got Trevino behind the plate, the latest example of that. You know, they just keep kind of reloading. And as a number one team, I ask both of you: is really the only question left for the Yankees is, are you going to make Judge an offer he can't refuse before he might potentially walk away at the end of the season?
You better.
You would think. I mean, I would. He's worthy of it, and he's deserving of it, obviously. I don't know what the Yankees' mindset is, but I would think you want to get that done sooner than later, or maybe you ride the horse, hoping that some the guys talk to him. And maybe he's good for that short porch in right field in New York. Maybe that's what they, maybe I don't think he's betting on himself, and he's winning thus far. We know that because he'd arguably be the MVP right now, not only of the American League but of all of baseball. But I think you have to at least extend the offer from a public relations standpoint because of what they did verbally when they told him what they made him an offer with before when he turned it down. They owe it to Judge, and they have to. And obviously, they're my top team in this week. Telling Cat this for our guys, we know they're going to score runs. They're top five in runs scored, but they've given up a league-low 180 runs against. That is 23 ahead of the second-place Dodgers. We haven't seen that in many years. Back in the glory days with the three or four studs, with the Andy Pettit, with the Roger Clemens, those pitchers that we had then, we haven't seen four starters pitching at the level this team is doing right now. You mentioned the Blue Jays, JC, your number five team. They're 11 games above 500, and they're 9 games back going into tonight. They're 11-1 in the month of June. They're at Toronto for a 3-game set over the weekend. Pay mind to that because from a litmus standpoint, with a young Blue Jay team playing well, high expectations, going to see what they're made of at home against the Yankees this weekend. Number one in ERA, number two in saves, number five in quality starts. Joe, you mentioned Gerrit Cole. 6-1, and he may not be the best starter in this rotation. And I mentioned Aaron Judge. He endeavors right now, first half MVPs, neck and neck. I'll give it to Judge because it's a little more and how far ahead they are. But this Yankee team, JC and Joe, no signs of letting up. And they're cruising. Number one in my power rankings on the Going Old School show. Speaking of the Going Old School show, Chips, Crow, and Joe here for you. In about 27 minutes, we're going to talk a little wrestling. Before that, little Pittsburgh Pirates. But let's talk about the aforementioned Red Sox, Joe and JC. JC, I'll start with you. Rafael Devers, you want to talk about making Aaron Judge an offer during the season? Could say the same for the third baseman up in Boston, can't you, Jay?
Yeah, no question. And, you know, the one thing, the caveat is, you know, you still got him for at least a couple more years before you have to make that offer before we'd have to leave. So do it as a twofer. You know, show your locker room you have some nads as an organization. Re-sign Xander Bogaerts because he is the face of the franchise. He is the glue of this team. He's the emotional leader. And Rafael Devers is that superstar MVP in the making that you're going to have to do the same thing to. So you know what? Overpay. Hey, give him a 4 or 5 year worth annual value a little bit greater than what you would normally do. Get them both done. Give the rest of your team some confidence that you're backing him. Go get yourself a closer. And then, hey, let's go. Now you're talking. But until they do that, I fear just the opposite message that this front office is sending by not re-signing Xander Bogaerts. They leave it out that he could potentially be traded. Mm-hmm. And then that sours Rafael Devers on being here as well. And all of a sudden, you could be left in such a deluge of a franchise as opposed to the good stuff that you have going now. Make it even better, Chaim Bloom. Do what you got to do. Not like it's coming out of your back pocket, right?
True. I would just hope they do that. So just a question for you both. You realize what day it is in baseball history? 1976. Yeah. It involves the Red Sox and one said Oakland A's.
Oh, the Joe Rudy.
Oh, it's the Joe Rudy and Raleigh Fingers.
Yep.
Correct. Today in this day history, before we get to the Pirates history, that was the day that the Red Sox bought Joe Rudy and Raleigh Fingers, and the Yankees bought, forgot who that was, and Billy Kuhn 3 days later denied them both.
Yep, yep. What could have been if that had happened? It would have been interesting, wouldn't it have been? as we relate. Talk about going old school. We just did, Joe. Going old school, I love it. But, guys, a little concerned about Trevor Story, aren't we? Okay, he had that solid 3.5 weeks of baseball, padded his stats. Okay, this is the Trevor Story you want to see. JC, the month of June, he's hitting a robust 209. He is 9-for-43 going into tonight. 15 strikeouts, no homers, 4 RBIs, only 4 walks, 5 doubles. Pinebloom, you're breathing a sigh of relief a few weeks ago, because you may have had your backup to Xander. You may have had a guy you thought who could play in Boston after they were a little skeptic out there, saying maybe he's not built for the city, maybe he's just not sure, long spring training, what have you. Hogwash. Right now, what do you think of him, Hein? Seriously, you got to be a little concerned. JC, I'm real concerned about Trevor Story.
Yeah, no question. It's kind of a good news, bad news type of thing. The good news is you're winning without his offense. He's playing great, been the glue of that infield. Devers and Bogarts are playing better around him, but at least he's kept that up. When he does get on base in the past couple of weeks, infrequently, he's using his speed. The problem I see him, especially in this last week, is he's reverted back to chasing and he's slow on the fastball again, which tells me he's not seeing the ball as well as he did about 3 weeks ago, because he was hunting fastballs, first pitches, second pitches. He was being aggressive. Now he can't catch up to him. So I don't know if there's something mechanically going on. I don't know if it's an eyesight thing. There's something that has reverted him back, because we've seen him do it. We know what the back of his baseball card tells us he is. Do I expect him to get back to there eventually? Yes, because if he doesn't, we're in for a very long 5 years of his contract here in Boston. But as far as the average, I mean, he was up to 240, and now he's back down to 220, and it's very disheartening. So hopefully they get to working with him again, because the rest of the team, they're doing fine without him. If you add that back to being hot in this lineup, watch out. Because, again, the pitching is taking care of itself. I mean, you look at their ERA the last 13 games, it's unbelievable. It's 1.85. A couple of 1-0 wins in Anaheim will do that for you.
Yeah.
But they're taking care of it at a time when you're without Evaldi, you're without Whitlock, you're without Sale, you're without Paxton, you're without a closer. Story can't hit. It's amazing that this team has gone from 11-19 to where they are today, third wild card team. So, again, it's good and bad news. Good where they are, but you know that other shoe is there to drop unless you take care of these things.
Speaking of, you said, mentioned it, Chris Sale, they say right now his velocity is up in the mid-90s, higher than it was when he first came back last year. So, do you feel that Bloom's going to freaking sit back and say, well, Chris Sale is our pickup at the trade deadline? Or is he going to not pull that stupid maneuver and actually go get somebody? Because we desperately need somebody besides what we've got. And yes, Trevor Story, I didn't realize Mario Mendoza was playing second base for us, but that's beside the point. they need some more timely hitting. And I'm still in the camp of we need another catcher, because Vasquez, I'll give up what offense he has for a defensive catcher that can call a good game, because this will only last so long and it'll catch up to us.
I'm not worried about the hitting with this team, guys. You've got Martinez, Bogarts, and Devers all top five in the league in batting average. I don't think that's a fluke. I'm not going to say it'll be there all year. But they have 3 or 4 bats in this lineup that will be consistent throughout. You can get away with that. Chris Sale, on the other hand, guys, he hit 96 on the gun today. I didn't like that for this reason and this reason only. I don't want him to be the fireball pitcher that he's always been, because that's when he gets hurt. He breaks down. We saw Pedro Martinez do this, guys, in 1999 and rebuild himself, remake himself, become a better breaking ball pitcher when he hurt his shoulder in the All-Star game in 1999. He did have success doing that. If Chris Sale has only three pitches and he's got a great slider and he's throwing 97, I don't think that bodes well for his success, because I'm waiting for this guy to break down again. I'm sorry. He's been hurt for 4 years. It's just that it's 2018. He has been injured. We haven't seen this guy. There's no reason to think, unless he beefs up or changes his mechanics to where he has another out pitch, maybe a fourth pitch, maybe a breaking ball, maybe a curve, even if he's not effective with it, he's got to reinvent that repertoire, JC, because I don't want to see this guy throwing 97, 98 consistently, because I don't trust his arm.
Yeah, he's kind of his own worst enemy at times, and the problem is it's not an arm issue now. He's come off Tommy John surgery. He came back, getting himself stronger, but it's been the rib. It's been a stomach illness. It's been some other personal thing that the Red Sox nor Sale will tell us what it is.
Right.
We just know that it was something else other than the stomach and the rib. But it's always with him, and it will always be there until he hangs it up, that his frame just won't allow him to be, you know, anything more than he is. So, you know, will they be able to get him back up to where he was when he was a 6, 7, 8 inning guy? Probably not. So they have to determine, can he at least be a guy that gets you through 5 and 6, and then you pair him up and exert all that on your bullpen? Or is he just going to be an opener? Time will tell, because he's certainly not going to the back end of the bullpen. Cora kind of put that to bed today, that he will be a starter. So, you know, it's just a matter of when we'll see him. It's supposed to be rehab time next week. We'll see.
So did you know that history is made in Houston today?
No,
Luis Garcia, and Phil Manton each threw an immaculate inning. 3 strikeouts on 9 pitches. But here's the key to this. They struck out the same 3 batters. Nate Lowe, Ezekiel Duran, and Brad Miller.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. No kidding.
Yep.
That's interesting.
A bad day for those guys.
Well, you're not kidding. The good thing about baseball, you take a shower, you get up tomorrow, and you do it all over again. Forget about it. That's interesting, Joe. Good stuff there by you, by the way. Hey, guys, I want to talk about negatives. We talked about positives and stuff, and Sale was kind of a positive negative. Trevor Story, you can argue. I'm going to call it a negative. That's just me in my mindset right now. But the bullpen. We talked about what this team is, and we talked wild card. And we feel the Red Sox, especially last year with the organization being 2 wins away from a World Series, you got to get to the playoffs, right? Can we all agree on that? And if we do, what are we going to do about the bullpen? 9 games this bullpen has blown with being tied or leading after 8 innings. That is atrocious, and that is not a fluke. What the hell are they going to do about this bullpen, JC? Is it a matter of bringing people up, band-aiding it, who's in Worcester, or are they got to go out and get something, because something's got to be done, and I'm not sure it's going to happen in-house?
Yeah, I don't think that answer's in Worcester. I don't think there's someone that you can say with confidence can get it done in high-leverage situations against the Blue Jays, against the Rays, against the Yankees on the road in a very harsh environment. I think you got to go out and get a guy like David Bednar or somebody else out there, but I just don't have the confidence that Chaim Bloom is as invested in this team as he should be at this point. I think he's just so comfortable in looking at this as a team that can be competitive, and if they get in, they get in. But I think in his mind, it's more towards next year, and I think he's unwilling to give what he needs to give to get a legitimate closer, because you're right. If you're going to be leaning on Tanner Houck to be your closer, on Hunter Robles to be your closer, on Diekman, on Strom to be your closer, I think we all know where that's going. We've seen this movie before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think any of us were surprised Hunter Robles gives up a lead Friday night in Seattle. Or was it Saturday night? Late nights get me, so It could have been Friday night. It could have been Saturday.
Yeah.
I can't remember. But it's unfortunate that Alex Cora has to play with this hand, with the Sawamuras on his team, with the Ryan Braziers of his team. Every day that they can skirt by with this, thank you, Lucky Stars, Red Sox Nation, because that other shoe is just waiting to disappoint you late in the season. But your guy has to go out and arm you, you know? And we all saw what this team did, you know, how they reacted when they didn't get help before in prior seasons. What did they do? They pouted. They didn't play well.
Yep.
I don't want this team to suffer the same fate because they fought very hard from being 11-19 to where they are now. They deserve
a great. Yep. You have to be rewarded. Joe, your thoughts?
They definitely need somebody in the bullpen. And yes, you can combine my two favorite teams, the Pirates closer with the team I really like, Red Sox, and get Bedard. But will he go out and trade for somebody? Because it's a train wreck out there, a small train wreck. And we knew that last year when we picked up Robles. And we're hoping that he blew enough saves, and that's why we got him on the cheap. Go out, trade some of your prospects, and get yourself a closer. Get yourself a bona fide closer because this team desperately needs it. Don't turn Tanner Houck into your next freaking Bonds and anybody else. It's like, you know what? I'd rather have Houck in the starting rotation than in the bullpen where you're playing games with his head. We've seen that man played before too many times. His name is Daniel Bard, and he's out in Colorado. So, yeah, they need to get somebody soon.
Agreed.
Like yesterday.
Yeah. Evaldi's on the 15-day DL. Garrett Woodlock, 15-day DL, right hip injury. You got to figure he's got to be back in the pen where he belongs, in my opinion. But you look at some of his bullpen stats. They're number 20th in ERA league-wide, number 27 in saves, number 19 in hits given up, 17th in earned runs, number 21 in whip. And they've given up 26 homers as a collective bullpen unit. It's amazing to think that they are actually, if the playoffs started today, they would be in the wild card. Wow. Just get it done, Pine. Get it done. And like you said, JC, the players are fighting their asses off. Show them some confidence. Reward them. Because if you do this 2 years in a row, and we talked about Schwarber last year, but, you know, he was on the IL, and he was injured when we brought him over. You did good things, but you really didn't reward the team the way you could have last year. So do it this year, or then it's going to become more of a trend than it is a sort of like just a happenstance or a knee-jerk reaction, if you will. But go Red Sox, as we say here. Okay, Joe, a little Pittsburgh Pirates minute before you guys talk some wrestling. Go right ahead, Joe, your favorite team. I know you've been chomping at the bit. Go for it.
Well, I have two things. Birthdays today for the Pittsburgh Pirates on this day is Eric Kratz and Josh Lindblom. Trades on this day in 1976, I believe, was Ed Kirkpatrick traded to Texas for Jim Fregosi. Small trade, two lesser-known birthdays, but that's my day in Pittsburgh Pirates history.
I don't really have – I have a twist on mine because I couldn't find anything worthy, but I'm going to say – this day in Pittsburgh Pirates history, in my opinion, takes place tomorrow, and that's June 16th, because the MLB Draft Combine is underway at Petco Park in San Diego. The Pirates have the number 4 overall pick. They built their farm system. They've got a couple of good cogs. DeBrian Hayes has been signed at third base. They're 24-37, and they're respectable. Third place in the NL Central. Owner Robert Nutting, I think you're the richest owner in all of baseball. You bought this team for $92 million in January of 2017. They are now worth an estimated $1.52 billion. You had 91 teams not too long ago under Clint Hurdle as manager. You've got a passionate fan base. You're not small market. Don't pretend to be. Reward them. Don't do it again. Lawrence McCutcheon was a cog. He was an MVP for your team. Get back to those winning ways and bring your history back to repeating itself and show some winning teams in Pittsburgh, damn it. I care. This guy nutting pisses me off, Joe. So history takes place, and the future is now for this Pittsburgh Pirate team. There you go. Little twist, but had to say that. All right, boys. Nine forty-five left in the show. Chip Skrow and Joe here for you on blogtalkradio.com, the Going Old School show. But the guys like to take me to the woodshed, i.e. the classroom, into the squared circle, because I know jack about wrestling like these two guys do. But without further ado, let's talk some wrestling, guys. JC, I know you write about it. You blog about it all the time. We'll start with you. What's going on in the world of WWE and some AEW, but have at it, boys.
I will get to wrestling in a bit, but I have to give you this Tom Brady quote from the Dan Patrick Show and get your reaction first.
Yep.
Because it's a retirement update. He said, quote, I had the appetite to compete, and it's going to be gone soon.
Wait, say that again? You got to repeat that. Go ahead. Repeat that. You got to repeat it.
Mr. Tom Brady this morning on the Dan Patrick Show, quote, I had the appetite to compete, and it's going to be gone soon.
What a freaking quote.
Trade me to somebody else, or my appetite is gone, is basically what he's saying.
Jeez, what a boy. Talk about cryptic. And was it Julian Edelman came out and kind of tweeted like, you never say never or something like that. It's, dude, enough of these guys with their tweets. Every athlete now is cryptic. We see it all the time. It's like, wow, what a tease. But Brady, guys, I mean, you guys are diehard Pats fans. Are you guys sick of this guy already, Joe?
Being a Brett Favre, I had enough of Brett Favre with this bullshit. Stop being a diva. Either retire or don't retire. I don't want to hear it anymore. It's like I've said it before when he left the Patriots. I like Tom Brady. I wish him the best. I'm not a fan of his anymore because he doesn't play for the Patriots. So thank God he's doing this to somebody else because it's like I'd be going nuts. But you know what? I don't have a horse in that race. He can do what he wants. But I think he wants to be traded.
Ding, 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 ding. I think you hit it on the head, Joe. I think this is a last-ditch attempt to get him to Miami.
Yep. What? Diva? Baby. And a crow, just a quick minute. Joe, back in the day when Brett Favre was going to retire, I think, remember, JC, it was one Saturday where he was going to retire announced at a golf tournament. So I think we all rushed to the score to cover the press conference, and he said absolutely nothing. Remember that, Jerry?
Unfortunately.
It was so you brought up Brett Favre. We'll talk about that sometime off the show. But, guys, let's get into the squared circle. But that's a good piece of information on that lovely diva, Tom Brady. JC, what's up in the world of wrestling? Joe, follow, please.
It's big news. Jeff Hardy, unfortunately, the demons have gotten them again. Ugh. Got arrested after a DUI, felony arrest. And, hey, the only thing you can hope is it was thankful. Nobody was injured. Nobody was killed. Hopefully he finally gets help from somebody, whether it's AEW, whether it's WWE, who tried to help him before, whether it's his family, his friends. Hopefully somebody gets Jeff Hardy the help he needs. His kids and his wife and his family deserve better.
I agree. I seen that. Now, I got a question. What happened? Did Orton need time off, or did he actually get hurt?
No, he's just taking some, you know, much like Roman Reigns, he's just taking some time off due to contract and expect those two to be facing off in Nashville for SummerSlam in the big stadium show at the end of July. Because, yes, we will have a Roman Reigns sighting this Friday, the first defense of the undisputed WWE Universal title, Reigns against Riddle, live on SmackDown. And I think Randy Orton is going to come save the day after Riddle gets annihilated.
I love me some Riddle, guys. Just had to say that. Go ahead, Joe.
I think that's going to happen. And it's like, I just, you know. So what's this I hear? John Cena's coming back to face and he's going to put over, I can't even think of his name, Vince's boy. And it's like, I can't
Austin
see
Theory.
Huh? I can't see him coming back to put over Theory unless he just loves WWE that much to do McMahon a favor.
I think it's a twofer. One, I think he actually does miss it, and he's a lifer, and, you know, he just, once he gets away too long, you know, he craves it. And I think, two, it's to get him involved with Money in the Bank, maybe get some last-minute ticket sales, sell out that pay-per-view. Remember, in Vegas, that was supposed to be in Allegiant Stadium. They moved it to the MGM. So they're still going to get 17,000, but it's not going to be the 40 they expected in the stadium. So I think they're going to bring Cena back, and they ultimately want him to get that, that title of most championships ever in WWE. Right now, mm-hmm. He's tied with Flair, so they eventually want to get him to that point, I think.
Yeah, it would be. That would be nice. It's just I can't stand the fact that, like, you have a WWE champion that shows up very rarely. I'm like, what happened to those days? I'm like, Vince lets these guys get away with murder. It's like they get so much time off. They get paid a ton, get all the time off in the world, and it's like, just aggravates me. And I'm like, then you got the AEW where you get guys as champions and they get hurt, and it's like, so injuries are playing, bearing their ugly head. So, and those, I have a feeling that somehow Seth Rollins wins the championship within the next. And when Rhodes comes back, it'll be him against Rollins for a championship. I just have that gut feeling, and that's when I think Rhodes finally wins the championship and he beats Rollins.
I totally agree with you there. Let me ask you this, Joe. Explain to me how Wardlow wasn't part of that whole interim championship mess. His explanation was that he wanted to face Punk. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but the interim champion is going to face Punk. He automatically gets the match. I don't understand what they were doing with Wardlow last week.
That's creative writing goof up. They screwed up royally because it's like you were doing the right thing with Wardlow. You built him up. And somehow by the issues with the other guy's contract, it's like it kind of sidetracked and derailed their train of thought. And there's no way in hell that Wardlow shouldn't have been involved in that interim title because he deserved every bit of it. And then you would have had CM Punk against Wardlow. And ultimately, it would have been two faces, but they still could have had Wardlow and Punk, both one-line faces, heels. It would have been a great match. But they missed the boat on that. Somehow, somebody missed the boat on that one.
Yeah, I didn't understand it. I mean, you could have had a good 3-4 months of building Wardlow up against good competition. So when he faces Punk, there you go. There's your guy. And, you know, if you want to have MJF come back and screw the entire company by screwing Wardlow, you could do that. At the Forbidden Door. But who knows?
But like I said, MJF with his contract issues, I think screwed up creative writing's thinking. And they're not guaranteed that he's going to be back. So it kind of like they were leery on MJF really thinking about leaving the company. I think that played a major role. Thinking
he's not going anyplace. This whole thing is a whole work. You know, they would have never let him on TV if this was the work. He's there for 2 more years. So he ain't going anyplace.
All right, gentlemen. All right. It's about that time, boys. I could listen to you guys forever, but unfortunately, we've got to go. Always, JC, Joe, always a pleasure, man. Thanks for carving out some time to join the podcast. It means a lot. Good public service. You good therapy for me. I thank you both from the bottom of my heart.
No problem. And just remember, just like the score, we'll be back.
You bet we will. Always a pleasure, Joey.
I love coming out on Wednesdays and throwing a haymaker here or there. It's always fun.
All right. Thanks to Lou. Thanks to Joe. Thanks to JC. Always a pleasure, guys. Until next week, take care, be well, be safe, and enjoy the NBA Finals. Take care, Ben.
Have a good night.